Hello, this is your Polycast for Tuesday, October 18th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Justice Sotomayor speaks at the University of Minnesota and key legislative races in southeastern Minnesota. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor is meeting with about 100 middle and high school students today at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul. The justice and members of the Minnesota Hispanic Bar Association are helping to launch a mentoring program for students. Sotomayor was at the University of Minnesota yesterday, where she told a packed Northrop auditorium about her childhood in the Bronx, her rise through a male-dominated legal profession, and the death this year of Justice Antonin Scalia. Matt Sepik has more.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor says in the New York housing project where she grew up, there weren't any lawyers. So as a child, her introduction to the legal profession came from TV, specifically Perry Mason. She admired the fictional lawyer's ability to get justice for his falsely accused clients week after week. But that's not the only thing she liked about the show.
I had a very bright light go off in my head. Perry did all the work. But the final word was the judge's. I wanted to be the judge.
In 1981, Sotomayor was 2 years out of Yale Law School and working as an assistant district attorney in New York City when President Reagan nominated the first woman to the Supreme Court. At the time, Sotomayor says there were very few women working in the DA's office or as partners in big law firms, and she immediately recognized Sandra Day O'Connor's appointment as a watershed moment.
What did it mean to me? Hope. Not about being a Supreme Court justice, but about having a career where I could aspire to become anything I wanted, just like you can.
Sotomayor made history herself in 2009 when she became the first Hispanic person and woman of color named to the High Court. Sotomayor says she's often asked about that milestone, but still finds it hard to answer.
I certainly don't feel that I'm a justice just for Hispanics. I am a justice for everyone, for every citizen in this country affected by law, in a good or bad place, because that's what we're asked to adjudicate.
Despite sharp divisions of opinion among the justices, Sotomayor says the Supreme Court remains highly collegial. She says the death of Justice Antonin Scalia in February hit everyone especially hard.
Losing him was losing a member of my family, and every justice felt that way. We fought, but we really, deeply, were friends with each other.
The U.S. Senate, controlled by Republicans, has refused to consider President Obama's choice of Merrick Garland to succeed Scalia. Sotomayor did not comment on the politics of Garland's nomination, nor did she discuss the presidential election in detail. But with eight justices on the court, Sotomayor says people shouldn't expect sweeping decisions on divisive issues.
We try to come to decision-making as best as we can, where we can find a very, very narrow way of deciding a case, we use it.
Sotomayor says it's harder for the court to do its job without a full bench, but even split decisions, she says, still resolve differing opinions from lower courts and ensure justice across the country is administered equally. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
In the battle for control of the Minnesota House, a few seats in southeastern Minnesota loom large. Throughout the area, deep-pocketed political groups are putting money into promising races, and both parties hope the top of the ticket will give their candidates an edge. As Catherine Richard reports in Rochester, a former Republican legislator is trying to make a comeback by winning an open seat.
On a sunny fall day, Fran Bradley is showing off a time-tested door-knocking technique in a quiet Rochester subdivision.
I know that upwards of half the people or more aren't going to be home, so I pre-sign some things that I can leave that has a little bit of a message on it. Looks like that's what we're going to be doing here.
These are tricks Bradley has developed over years of campaigning. He represented this northeast corner of town in the Minnesota House from 1995 until 2006. On Election Day, Bradley's hoping to win the seat again, which was held for a decade by DFL Representative Kim Norton, who decided not to seek re-election this year. Bradley says his previous experience chairing the House Health and Human Services Committee resonates with voters in the home of the Mayo Clinic. But while Bradley may be an experienced politician who many voters know, he says he's not taking anything for granted. In the 10 years Bradley has been out of office, his district has become more diverse and more liberal, with a majority having voted for President Barack Obama twice.
I've been around long enough to know there are people that know my name, but that's a small fraction. So I have to run like I'm brand new. I have to run hard.
Former band teacher and real estate agent Dwayne Sauk is Bradley's opponent. Sauk has ties to Rochester's business community, but he's new to politics. He said he decided to run after being recruited by outgoing legislator Norton. Sauk says voters in his area are concerned about education and health care, but he also hears a lot about stalemate at the legislature. Sauk said he'll work across the aisle if he wins.
I'm here for the benefit of getting things done and for the benefit of all of us working together. You don't own all the good ideas.
The Sauk-Bradley race is one of several in southeast Minnesota that can make a big difference in the balance of power at the Capitol next year. Republicans control the Minnesota House, and Democrats need to pick up 7 seats to flip the majority. Both parties and their allies are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on races in the area to try to win, and that includes House and Senate seats in Red Wing, Faribault, and Albert Lea. Just south of Rochester, in Fillmore County, longtime Republican Representative Greg Davids of Preston says his constituents are deeply concerned about health insurance premiums and deductibles. The House Tax Committee chair says it's DFL-backed policies that have caused those costs to spike.
They're in tears. I had farmers, $3 corn, so they're losing money on that side, and they're saying we're going to have to go back to work until 65 to get a job that has health insurance.
Still, Democrats are betting big on David's opponent, Thomas Trias. So far, the liberal group, the Alliance for a Better Minnesota, has spent $113,000 to help Trias win. Trias said mailers paid for by the group are helping him with name recognition, a challenge when running against someone who's been in office for more than 2 decades.
People are tired of the gridlock and tired of career politicians talking big and then getting up there and not getting along with the other party and not working together.
DFL party chair Ken Martin said Trias is a strong candidate, but Democrats have a broader strategy to pick up and keep seats in southern Minnesota. Martin said having presidential candidate Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket will help.
Southern Minnesota generally is an area where Hillary is doing very well, and so that will have an impact on down-ballot races, not only in Rochester, but in Mankato and in Albert Lea and Faribault.
Republican Party Chair Keith Downey disputes the notion that Donald Trump won't hold his own in southern Minnesota.
The energy at events, the number of people that are requesting lawn signs, and just the number of people coming to phone banks and those kinds of things are a good signal of energy for a top-of-ticket candidate.
Between now and Election Day, Downey said he's focused on voter turnout, and he expects voter excitement for Trump to push people to the polls on November 8th. Catherine Richert, Minnesota Public Radio News in Rochester.
A key member of a group that advises state regulators on walleye fishing on Lake Mille Lacs has resigned. The Department of Natural Resources formed an advisory committee a year ago to get advice on the state's response to the lake's threatened walleye population. But in his resignation letter, Jamie Edwards of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe wrote the group has devolved into an anti-science, anti-treaty rights forum. Dan Crocker has that story.
Jamie Edwards was the only tribal member on the Mille Lacs Fisheries Advisory Committee, and in his letter to DNR Commissioner Tom Landwehr, he wrote he was one of few who didn't have economic ties to the lake's walleye fishery. Edwards, who's the Mille Lacs Band's Director of Government Affairs, wrote that instead of contributing to the state's broader understanding of the Mille Lacs fishery, committee members, quote, devote their meetings to discussing agenda items that dismiss scientific findings and do not respect the sovereign status of tribes. He wrote there's an inherent bias against tribal members exercising their treaty rights and called the hostility directed at the DNR, quote, appalling, with a nearly complete disregard for sound science. Edwards did not respond to interview requests. DNR Fisheries Chief Don Pereira called Edwards' resignation disappointing, and he hopes to replace him with another tribal representative. But he said the committee is not anti-science or anti-treaty rights. Pereira acknowledged some committee members are critical of the band's use of nets to harvest walleye during the spawning season, but he says the DNR has consistently said tribal netting is not what has caused the drop in the walleye population.
They kind of want us to look really closely at that to see if there's an issue with harvesting fish while they're spawning, and we're very, very certain that there is not. So that was kind of a tension point that still continues today.
Pereira also says he feels the DNR assembled a committee that represents diverse interests.
There are 6 business owners out of the 15 on the committee. And, you know, they are the loudest voices. That's not too surprising. They obviously have a bigger stake in the game than some of the other representatives that we have.
The DNR formed the advisory committee a year ago to help guide management decisions on the lake after the state took the unprecedented step of closing the Mille Lacs walleye fishery early. The shutdown came after anglers exceeded the agreed-upon quota for the non-tribal harvest. The state was again forced to close the walleye season early this year. Committee member Steve Kulifai, who owns the Red Door Resort in Aiken, says the committee is not anti-science, but has questioned the DNR's methods. He says what anglers see on the lake often differs from what the DNR reports.
And so what we're doing is saying, well, here's what we're seeing, and here's what you're stating from a biological standpoint, and it doesn't seem to add up. So how can we further test this? What else can be done? You know, can we put further test nets in these different areas? Can we do these different things?
Kulifai also says Edwards did not attend several meetings, listened to others by telephone, and rarely participated. He says the committee hopes the DNR can replace him with another tribal representative. A spokesman for the Mille Lacs Band says Edwards did participate in a vast majority of meetings. Edwards is not the first committee member to resign over concerns about how science is viewed by the committee. University of Minnesota fisheries biologist Paul Venturelli stepped down in May. He was the committee's sole academic representative. In his resignation letter, he wrote the DNR was effective at communicating the science, but the majority of the committee is steadfast in the belief that the science is inherently flawed. Venturelli says he felt the DNR should fill his position with someone trained in conflict resolution.
You know, I had one member tell me that, you know, thank you for sharing your opinion, but I prefer to listen to people whose hands smell like fish. I guess the implication or the idea that that person was trying to get across was that, you know, I'm in an ivory tower crunching numbers. And it's really people who are on the water who know what's going on that lake.
Venturelli says Edwards stepping down further diminishes the voice of those on the committee who are more open to evidence-based science. The next management decision the committee can weigh in on is coming up later this fall, when the DNR decides what kind of walleye harvest to allow, if any, during the upcoming ice fishing season. Covering the environment, I'm Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.